tell us a little bit about the fuels that your plant, Yokeo Biofuels, produces?
Yeah, I mean, right now we are really a one-trick pony. We make one fuel, and it is biodiesel, and we make it from used restaurant fryer oil.
Okay.
So we collect. We're very small in terms of, you know, the biodiesel industry is getting really big, and we're a very small player in it. You know, currently we're making and selling about 20,000 gallons a month, which is tiny by industry standards, but as far as a vertically integrated operation, we're setting a pretty decent standard. There aren't many companies doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're collecting oil from about 500 restaurants, and at our production plant, we clean that up, put it through the chemical process that transforms it into biodiesel and takes out the glycerin, and then once we've got the biodiesel product purified, then we deliver that.
Okay. And why did you start Yokeo Biofuels?
It was a total kind of environmental, political decision for me. Really ideals-based, and I had no idea. You know, I started it in 2001, and I had no idea what the biodiesel industry was going to look like. I mean, the idea of a biodiesel industry wasn't even really there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just into the idea of, oh, I found out about this fuel. I'm running it in my car. It works really great. Why isn't everybody able to get it? So I brought some into the county. And luckily, where we are in Mendocino County in Northern California, there's a lot of diesel usage and, you know, a lot of farmers and a lot of diesel trucks and tractors. And there's also a lot of environmentalism and awareness of sustainability issues. And so I was able to kind of capitalize on that.
Mm-hmm. So given your location, how popular would you say your pumping station is?
Well, we've got three pumping stations in this county, although most of our business is deliveries to farms and residential users and businesses. As far as our pumping locations, again, we're very, very small volume, so if we were measuring popularity on volume, I'd say we're not even on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to give an idea of how valued we are in the community, I mean, we did recently win an award from the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, congratulations.
In this area for being a community leader. So, you know, people know about us. We get a lot of press and stuff. People like having us around. And thank you.
And what do you think should be done to increase the availability of biodiesel and other renewable fuels and increase the demand for fuel flex vehicles, which we promote here at this
center? I think the most important thing right now, and it's kind of the root of everything, so people are focusing a lot on marketing, and they're focusing a lot on kind of these further downstream things, but at the root of it all is feedstock viability, you know, the source for the biofuels. And as far as my industry, biodiesel, I think that that's the most important thing, is to develop appropriate regional feedstocks. You know, for us right now, that means recycled restaurant fryer oil. That's kind of the most ecologically correct, benign feedstock available to us right now. But obviously, that's not going to last very long. We're not very big yet. As we grow, we're going to need something more than that, and it makes no sense for me to the praises of our fuel ecologically and be importing soybean oil from the Midwest to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're working on developing local feedstocks. I'm researching something called the Chinese tallow tree, which in much of the United States is classified as a pest invasive species, but here in California it's not, and it yields quite a bit of oil. So, you know, 10 times more oil per acre than soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
So we're researching that right now. I've got some test trees that we're working with. And, yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge that's in the way. And, unfortunately, it's only kind of getting barely minimally addressed by the biofuels lobbying forces.
So the Center for American Progress's policy recommendations focus on rewarding farmers for promoting environmental standards. What do you think is the most important change that must be made to the Farm Bill in particular?
Well, I think that people need to, the most important change is an appreciation for appropriate regional crops. as opposed to the one-size-fits-all approach with, like, soybeans for biodiesel and corn for ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
Those just don't make sense in a lot of areas, and specifically, they're both very low-yield crops. So I think the biggest thing for farmers to think about is what works best in your area and what will give you the highest possible yield. And for me, that might mean Chinese tallow trees. As we head into the future, it might even mean something kind of crazy like microalgae. But, you know, I can't recommend Chinese tallow trees to someone in South Carolina because there it's a pest. And if they grow one, they're going to be growing 100 nearby.
Right.
So I think that people need to focus on those kind of roots of it all rather than promoting the word biodiesel and promoting the word ethanol,
mm-hmm.
and everybody getting excited about corn and soy.
Right. How does using biodiesel affect greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, it definitely reduces them dramatically. I mean, if you think about it, you know, the biggest greenhouse gas emission being carbon dioxide, whenever you've got a fuel that's based on plants that you're growing today, and even if it's from restaurant fire oil, it's still basically plants that were grown today, you've got a closed loop carbon dioxide cycle. The plants suck it out of the green plants suck it out of the air, and then, you know, you process them one way or another. You get your fuel out of that, and the oil that you put back into the air cannot be more than what was taken out of the air in the first place. The carbon dioxide that you put out into the air can't be more than what that plant sucked out of the air in the first place. So, you know, being part of a closed loop like that, we're not really mining carbon dioxide and dumping it into the atmosphere. You know, I look mm-hmm. at biodiesel and ethanol when they're done as sustainably as possible as a solution to carbon dioxide dumping. Because when you're mining your fuel, that's what you're doing, is you're taking sources of carbon dioxide from way down in the ground. You know, we don't really know what purpose they're serving there, but we're dumping it, you know, wholesale into the atmosphere, and that doesn't have the same kind of balanced approach as biofuels.
Mm-hmm. So what's the cost to consumers to switch to biofuels?
Well, right now, the cost is generally between, you know, 50 cents to a dollar higher for biodiesel per gallon. And there's various blends that people can get. You know, we are interested in the high blend. You know, we used to call it B100, but due to subsidies and stuff since then, now everybody says B99.9 because to get a certain tax credit, you need that nominal amount of petroleum in there.
Right.
But we're interested in that high end, but that's where you're going to see the biggest difference in price. Right now, for instance, our pump price is $3.69 a gallon. And that's partially reflective of really higher costs to do all this kind of business in California.
Mm-hmm.
If I was doing the same thing in Texas, I might be charging, you know, $3.20 a gallon, maybe less. You know, our fuel costs $3.69 a gallon around here at the gas station. Diesel sells around here for $3 a gallon, so we're about 70 cents higher.
So the center promotes the sale of E85 fuel. That's one of our policy recommendations in our report on the Farm Bill. How frequently is E85 used in Northern California, and what are the benefits of its usage, would you say?
I would say that, unfortunately, it's hardly used in California at all. I see lots of people with flex fuel vehicles,
mm-hmm.
but most of them don't even know that they have flex fuel vehicles. And even if they do know, there's very few places they can get ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's a pump there's not actually a pump in Sonoma County, which is the county south of us. Sorry, there's some kids here in the background.
Okay.
In Sonoma County, just south of us, I think there's some kind of buyer's club, and I don't even know if they have a public pump. But it's very hard to get in this area.
So how do we spread the word? Because you said that you see plenty of people with flex fuel vehicles who don't even know that they have flex fuel vehicles.
Well, I think the key is, I mean, one of the problems in California is that any drop of ethanol that's made is going to go into our gasoline in this state,
mm-hmm.
because there's a mandate for E10 basically,
mm-hmm.
and there hasn't been enough ethanol to meet that mandate. So all the gasoline in California, from what I understand, is currently E5.7. And so, you know, from what I understand, there's tons of ethanol being imported
mm-hmm.
to meet the California demand, and it's affecting the livestock feed industry, and it's affecting the chip and tortilla industry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, to really make some inroads there, again, I'm a feedstock guy, you know, you got to get away from corn.
Right. So what would you say is the most important factor that would motivate Americans to switch to renewable fuels?
Well, I think the most important factor, you know, as far as catching, you know, the interest of your average American is still getting off of a dependence on foreign oil. I think, you know, if I'm trying to get someone to think about using our fuel, and I don't know if they're Republican or Democrat, I don't really know anything about them, that's going to be my number one argument.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody understands how much world chaos is going on right now with regards to oil. But on a local level, you know, in my local community, for instance, we just sent out a survey recently and found out that the most important things to all of the people around here who are interested in biodiesel are that it's locally generated and that it's ecologically sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, you know, once you've got people interested in the idea, then that's the level that I think needs to be achieved.
Okay. Those are definitely some really good answers to some really tough problems.
Hey,
is there anything else you'd like to add about Yokeo or what you think Congress needs to do to promote the use of such sustainably produced biofuels?
Well, I think, first of all, thank you. They're really good questions. And I just think that promotion is kind of a dangerous thing if there's not really a lot of research done on what the best thing is to be promoting. And I think that right now there's a risk of promoting kind of a half-formed concept. And that's when you get problems with, like, the livestock industry and the tortilla shortage because you're using all your corn to produce ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when it's not the ideal feedstock in the first place. And we see this, you know, with any biofuel, is that the most popular one is always going to be whoever's got the biggest lobbying force.
Exactly.
And so I would just really urge that in the promotion of biofuels, you know, a pretty intense magnifying glass is applied to what the end result's going to look like. And what kind of issues of regional appropriateness and what kind of possible detrimental effects to other industries could arise as a result of focusing on, you know, whatever specific products we're focusing on.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, no problem.